Thank you. Be seated.
The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Office of Public Utility Council versus Public Utility Commission of Texas and West Texas Utilities Company.
May it please the court, Mr. Steve Fogle will present the argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'm Steve Fogle, appearing on behalf of the Office of Public Utility Council. In my time today, I'll be making 3 points. First, deferred charges is an example of retroactive rate making because it allows the utility to recover for alleged losses associated with providing service during an earlier time period. That's the essence of retroactive rate making that's routinely ruled to be illegal. Second, I'll deal with the standard for deferred charges. In this case, the Commission used the measurable harm standard. In later cases, the Commission repudiated this standard, saying it was too speculative because there was no clear definition of measurable harm, that the standard was excessively and impermissibly lenient in favor of the utility company, and that the standard failed to take the ratepayer's interest into account. And incidentally, in the WTU case, the Commission said that this was a lesser standard than the QIP standard. Third, this is a rate case because it provides indirect compensation to the utility company. The Commission provides the utility with assurance that ratepayers will have to pay for the deferred accounting. We're never given an opportunity to explain that there are offsetting cost decreases during the time that the deferred charges are being accrued. The first point is the retroactive.
Council offsetting cost decreases?
Yes, sir. For example, if I could use this chart, for example, to show. What we have here is the rates were set in a previous case. The rates are continuing into effect. The utility puts a new plant into service. Then the utility files a rate case, and then it gets new rates going into effect. So our question here is, during this hatch period here, how do we deal with the cost associated with the new power plant? During the same time period, the utility has costs going down. For example, the income tax rate went from 46 to 34%. The cost of money was going down. There were other changes. Some costs might have gone up, some costs might have gone down. But we're never given an opportunity to say that some of the cost decreases offset the money that the utility is accruing for the deferred charges. The Commission looks at a single item. It looks at the new power plant, and it says the utility is entitled to earn a return on that plant and get the operation and maintenance cost and the depreciation for that plant. But the Commission ignores that there are maybe cost decreases that mitigate that. Now, when the Commission sets new rates here, it will be allowing the utility to receive a return on the use of the plant during this point forward and the operation and maintenance cost of the plant from this point forward. So the ratepayers will be, when the new rates are set, the ratepayers will be paying for the new power plant. And in addition to paying for that new power plant, they're also being made to pay for service that was provided in the past. The utility is saying that it incurred certain cost increases during this time period, and customers are made to pay for a portion of this, as well as for full compensation in this time period. If I were to come in and say, you know, this utility over-earned during this time period, it made too much money, and it made $10 million too much during this time period, and I therefore want to have a $1 million a year reduction in the utility rates for the next 10 years, I would be booted out of the Commission. I'd be booted out of the courts because that's retroactive rate making. But that's exactly what we have here. The utility is in essence saying it didn't earn enough money to get its authorized return, and therefore it's allowed to recover in the future period for this alleged loss that occurred in the past. The problem is there's no finding that there were alleged losses. The Commission never did a complete revenue requirement analysis. You never looked at all revenues, operating expenses, anything like that. The Commission did look at financial indicators, but that sort of analysis is flawed because all the Commission did in the WTU case is say, did the financial indicators go down during the time period? And the Commission didn't look at, for example, could the company still have had access to the capital? Did the company need to access the capital markets? did the company still have financial integrity? For example, there are various ranges of financial integrity for bonds. You go from AAA down to BBB, AAA, AA, BBB. It could have been during this time period that WT or any of the utilities we've been talking about today still would have been in that range of financial integrity, still could have accessed the capital market. But the commission never looked at that question.
Now, in the handout that I have provided, the colored handout is basically a better version of this handwritten chart over here. And I've already gone through my explanation of that. But there's another handout, which is some excerpts from later commission orders. And this is getting to my second point, that the commission changed the standard or used the standard of measurable harm in this case. The commission basically said that measurable harm, and the commission set up a two-step standard. The first was, did the company need to defer accounting to obtain capital on reasonable costs? And the second step was, did the company need deferred accounting or in order to avoid measurable harm? Well, the commission never made any findings or never even dealt with this first standard of, was the financial integrity so fragile that the company needed deferred accounting in order to obtain capital on reasonable costs? You can look through the commission's order in the WTU case. You can find any findings on that. There's really no discussion on that. The commission focused solely on the measurable harm standard. That is the same standard that the commission used in the El Paso case that you heard earlier. In the CP&L and HLMP cases that you heard earlier, there's another handout that I gave, which is some excerpts from those orders. The commission expressly rejected the measurable harm standard. The commission, as I said before, said that it didn't take the ratepayers' interest into account and that it was too speculative. Yet that's the same standard that the commission used in the WTU case. As far as my third point of this being a rate case, we were never allowed to view the deferred charges in the context of a complete revenue requirement analysis. In this case, before the commission, docket 7289, we did discovery so that we could do all income statement balance sheets, a complete review. The commission told us we could do it in the next case, which is docket 7510, which is now in the Court of Appeals. When we got to docket 7510, the commission said, oh, we're sorry, you should have done it in this case. So we were caught basically in a double whammy. We were never allowed to present the case we wanted to present in order to show that the utility did not need the deferred charges.
Docket 7510 is pending in the Austin Court of Appeals.
Yes, they were heard at the district court level together, but then they got segregated for procedural reasons. But the issues there is deferred accounting all over again. And I suspect it'll work its way up to this court eventually.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court. Ms. Norma Scoggin and Mr. Harry Major will present arguments for the respondent. Ms. Scoggin will open with the first 5 minutes.
May it please the court. The first response that I would like to make to the petitioner's argument in this case is that it just isn't true that this is retroactive rate making. Mr. Fogle has said that the utility is saying that it didn't earn enough money in the past, and therefore these deferrals ought to be permitted. In fact, the utility is saying, if some relief is not granted, we are not going to recover these costs in the future.
But under your prior policies, they weren't entitled to.
No, I don't think that's true, Your Honor. It's not true that they were not entitled to. Under our prior policies, under the Commission's prior policies, it was difficult or perhaps impossible to recover them without some kind of extraordinary relief, and that is why deferred accounting was allowed. These expenses are, as Mr. Reisner explained in the argument before, are the very same kinds of expenses that are routinely included in rate base. There is nothing about the expenses themselves that would require a particular treatment as either capital or expense.
So do they require a showing that the that this will affect the financial viability of the utility, or is this just a matter of ensuring a rate of return on investment is accorded to the utility?
Well, in this case, the facts in this case are that the commission found that there would be measurable harm to the utility's financial condition.
My question is that important? Or is it a matter, or is it a matter of ensuring that the investors get a rate of return on their investment?
What the commission has the duty to do is to make sure that the utility has a reasonable opportunity to get a reasonable return on its investment plus its expenses. I think anything the commission does within that that standard is going to be permissible under PURA. Along with that authority, it goes the discretion to decide what the terms are going to be, what the standard is going to be for whatever relief is granted.
But
if
you don't
otherwise
dispute that the standard that was applied in this case, 679, is one that the commission has subsequently rejected as being too speculative.
Your Honor, what has happened in this case, and I think it's clearly permissible under all the precedent of public utility regulation, is that the commission has dealt with the problem on an ad hoc basis. There's not a rule in place as to what the standard was going to be.
There may be an explanation, and I'm eager to hear it, but is that correct, that the commission here applied a standard in this particular case that it has subsequently rejected as being too speculative?
The commission has rejected the measurable harm standard. I believe that as it was applied in this case, as the evidence showed in this case, it's very clear that that what the commission did in WTU was reasonable in applying the measurable harm standard. I believe what the commission said later on is there's a possibility under the measurable harm standard that a utility really won't have much harm at all, and we as a policy matter don't want to create a situation where we might be forced to permit deferred accounting in that that instance. In this case, in the WTU case, there was ample evidence that in the absence of deferred accounting, this small utility was going to experience some very serious difficulties. This was a major investment. The Oakland Union plant was a major investment for WTU. As I said, it was a small utility. The facts showed that if the deferral order was not allowed, a major portion of WTU's 1986 net income would be completely wiped out. The evidence also showed, and the examiner found, that WTU would have to forego a fourth quarter dividend in the absence of a deferral order, and that WTU would be unable to maintain its current bond rating. It seems clear to me that that amounts to something that's going to cause difficulty in obtaining capital on reasonable terms. So there wasn't a great deal of difference in this case between the financial integrity standard and the measurable harm standard. I believe as it was applied, it was well within the commission's discretion.
Is it correct that they were not permitted to put on expert testimony concerning the relationship between West Texas and its parent company and the impact of the financial integrity on both?
It is correct that the commission found that it was not relevant, that the financial condition of the parent company was not relevant.
And that when they then offered the same testimony in the later rate-making proceeding, 7510, the same utility opposed the testimony there as then being moot?
I don't know that it was exactly the same testimony, and Mr. Reisner might be better able to answer that particular question than I am. I would like to point out that it's not true that the commission completely ignored any reductions in costs.
Was the essence of the testimony excluded in the first proceeding, permitted in the latter proceeding?
I believe it was not permitted in
either latter proceeding.
In either proceeding, as not being relevant to the determination. But the point that I would like to make is that the commission did allow for an offset of the deferred expenses for the purchase power that was replaced by Oakley Union. When the Oakley Union plant went online, certain purchase power contracts were displaced. The expense of those contracts was included in rates. and what commission ordered, what WTU asked and what commission ordered, was that there be an offset so the deferrals would be actually less to take into account the fact that the ratepayers already were paying for something that, was no longer needed. So I did want to make that point, and I believe my time is up unless someone has a question.
Any other questions?
Ms. Coggin, it seems to me what's being argued by the petitioners is that they did not have an opportunity to contest the issues with regard to what expenses affected the financial integrity and what expenses were just larger than usual but didn't affect the financial integrity. And those determinations are foreclosed to them in a subsequent rate issue. Is there anything, I mean, is there anything in the commission rules that were violated with regard to an opportunity to be heard by the Office of Public Utility Counsel on that question?
There were not any commission rules that were violated. And to the extent that the Office of Public Utility Counsel may have a complaint now that in a later case they were precluded from doing something that they should have been able to do in a rate case, I think that is an issue for that appeal and not for this one.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the Court. If I might, I'd like to begin by dealing with two of the points, and that is that deferred accounting is retroactive rate making and that this is a rate case. It seems to me that Mr. Fogel is confusing two issues, and if I could go back to the charter of recovery of utility plant costs. This, again, is an addition of new plant to the system, plant which has never been in the rate base, plant which was based on a very large investment and of which the utility has not earned a dime. Now, what is involved here is how this is put into the rate base, this investment. All they're deciding is, since we have created a lag before we can make a decision whether it goes into the rate base, we will extend the capitalization of the cost of the plant. Same kinds of costs that were being incurred here, operation and maintenance, insurance, ad valorem, et cetera. The question whether West Texas Utilities was earning excessive rates during the time it was building that plant is a separate and independent question. If they were earning excessive rates, they could have immediately brought a Section 42 case, had a rate hearing, had those excessive rates reduced. The question of what rates will be earned on the plant once it is put into the rate base is not yet determined. If West Texas Utilities' earnings are excessive, they will be reduced. That's the way our system operates. You have fixed and approved final rates. You make too little, you make too much, they're adjusted during the next rate case. And nothing precluded OPUC from doing that here if they really believe those rates were excessive. But we do not, under our system, when you build a new plant, say, well, you may spend $1 billion on it, but guess what? We may look back over the next 5 years and decide, past 5 years, decide your earnings were excessive, decide you've spent $1 billion on a new plant and get zero for it. No state in America that I'm aware of has such a system. Who on earth would build a new plant if that were our system?
Mr. Reasoner, I guess what's excessive might be viewed differently by West Texas Utilities and some ratepayer out there, but if, without using that term, if we just use the term generous, isn't it appropriate for the commission, when it makes this decision, to determine whether the rates have been sufficiently generous or sufficiently adequate that West Texas Utilities can fund this without debt?
No, Your Honor.
You don't do that. It's not appropriate to do that.
I think it is entirely inappropriate. I think it comes back to the question that Justice Cornyn asked, And that is, if you make an investment, are you going to be given a reasonable opportunity to earn a return on it? And I believe that the statute provides that. I believe that the Constitution requires it.
So you think you get that every time without any showing of an impact on financial integrity?
I don't need to espouse that proposition, but I would support it, yes. I think if you spend $100 million in building a new plant, then you're entitled and you're allowed to put it into the rate base, then you have a reasonable opportunity. And if there's a gap created by the commission, then you should get deferred accounting on it. But the court doesn't face those issues here. Here there were findings that where the commission created this period, this gap here, where real costs were being incurred, where, as Mr. Heron pointed out, $600 million for HLNC, $270 million for CP&L. Here in the case of West Texas Utilities, the amounts are somewhat smaller, but also the unit is somewhat smaller. As the examiner found here, it would have caused their bond rating to be lowered. It was two-thirds of their net income, one-third of their returned earnings. We're not talking about trivial inclusion of expense. We're talking about whether the commission acted properly within its discretion in adding new plan additions. But I would say, Your Honor, if West Texas over-earned for 5 years, generous in your terms, then OPUC has not done its job, the commission has not done its job. They were perfectly free to institute a rate case in year one, year two, year three, and bring those earnings into line. What our system does not permit is for you to lie silent for 5 years. Somebody invests hundreds of millions of dollars in building a rate case and say, guess what? You invested hundreds of millions of dollars, but we're not going to give you a reasonable opportunity to earn a return on that rate case. That would be a destructive system, Your Honor. Going back to your original point, how can you expect the utilities to provide the enormous capital investments required for the future of Texas unless you give them a system which gives them a reasonable opportunity to earn a return, and that is all that is before this court.
And since the legislature had that concern before it, each time that it, the Public Utility Regulatory Act enacted and reenacted, didn't it provide a means to address that problem through construction work in progress and the real ability to put in rights under bond?
It did provide a remedy, Your Honor. It gave, under 39, it required the commission to give a reasonable opportunity. Under 27, it gave them the opportunity to set up the forms of accounts required to do it. It referred to FERC accounting, which permits deferred accounting. Now, here, the remedies that Your Honor refers to would not work. First, the commission, going back to Justice Alcorn's point, the commission quite properly decided we want to decide these rate cases based on historical evidence so that by the time you could have gotten temporary rates or bonded rates, since you would have had to wait until after the commercial and operation date, many months would have passed, hundreds of millions of dollars in expense would have been incurred, and those remedies simply would not work. Further, Your Honor, I think the commission is quite correct in thinking those are not preferred remedies here because you would have put in the temporary rates or bonded rates, immediate impact on the consumer with no decision ever being made based on historical experience in the operation of a nuclear plant as to whether they were appropriate rates. So you could have had overcharges to the consumer. Here, the commission quite appropriately based them on historical evidence, but provided in El Paso, in El Paso's case and the other two, we still haven't had the rate case. We don't know how much is going to be earned. And if those earnings, if there are savings, they will be reduced in the rate case. There is no
I know your time's up. One of the issues that Ms. Bowe was raising is you talk about $600 million, extraordinary expense, but they do not have the opportunity to contest whether any portion of that $600 million is just simply an increase in cost of the utility that would not otherwise be entitled to be considered except at a rate hearing where they could contest. In other words, to their point of view, it is not what costs are included. It is that it's an all or nothing determination when you defer these expenses on the issue of whether or not certain expenses were extraordinary. Do you understand my question?
I think I do, Your Honor. Let me say that I think you can be sure to a moral certainty that when we have the right case, OPUC will be in there contesting the reasonableness of necessity and proof of the expenses.
Except they're arguing that they're arguing as to the future, but they can't argue as to whether or not those expenses were extraordinary for the purposes of allowing them to be deferred to the future rate case.
It is true, Your Honor, that if there's advance approval and a deferred account has been set up, then they have to deal with that account. But they are perfectly free to try to prove that we don't get one dime, that all of those expenses were unnecessary, that they were improved, that they were unreasonable, and
that's not my point. My point is, if my labor costs for running utility go up after rates been set, the next period of time that my labor costs go up, I haven't built a plant, my labor costs just go up. That's it. They're arguing that you can adjust that at the next rate hearing, and they can contest whether or not there haven't been other savings that have offset that, so the cost, the return is the same anyway. But if you do deferred accounting, your labor costs may go up. That's irrelevant. I mean, it's not material, the issue of building that plant. It's just your labor costs have gone up. It just so happens that some of the labor is in this plant over here. If they defer that cost to the future date, they cannot argue that $100 million out of the $600 million was really offset during the same period of time because of $100 million savings. You still have an extraordinary expense, still affects the financial integrity of the utility, but there a part of that expense is the normal operating risks that a utility undertakes during the period of time that the rates had been set but before the next rate hearing that they are foreclosed from contesting because of deferred treatment.
Well, if that's their position, Your Honor, it is an erroneous one. Because in that rate case, they will look at everything, all of the costs, et cetera, to see what the revenue requirement of the utility is. And it may be that our total return to the utility would be lower. Because, say, we put the nuclear plant online and close two inefficient old plants, it may net out and we may get the same money or less money. So that they get to do in the rate case. They get to offset increases in cost, et cetera, in the same way. The key, Your Honor, and why it's not retroactive rate making, we well recognize that if labor costs go up, we don't get to recover before we have an next rate case and prove it's incremental. The key here is this is an addition of a vast new generating plant for which we have not earned a dime. We've not made a nickel on that plant. We want to put it into the rate bank, prove in the rate base and the rate base criteria what return we're entitled to. And they will have full opportunity. We will not be entitled to earn anything because we've been allowed to create a deferred account.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, I'd like to refer to the chart I was using before. Entitled to do in the future rate case is to look at whether these costs from this point forward are reasonable. And if there are offsetting cost increases, a new plant comes in and therefore they back off a less efficient plant, all sorts of cost increases and decreases from this point forward. We don't have a problem with that. What we're complaining about is that we were precluded that during this time period, the utility was allowed to say that it had a cost increase. And it was allowed to accrue that cost increase and recover it during this time period. We were never given the opportunity in this docket or in the 7510, the rate case, to go back and look at this time period. We were basically saying, look, if the utility wants to show that its cost went up and it's entitled to get more money, then we should be entitled to show that there were certain cost decreases or offsetting costs
that mitigated against it.
Why should you get to show that with respect to those costs when you couldn't do it with respect to the CWIP or the AFUDC costs?
Well, we're basically saying no one should get to do it during this time period. We're basically was saying, look, we set rates here, we're set once and for all, and things go up and down until the rates are changed again over here.
There are some construction costs identical to the costs that we're talking about here, which are capitalized without argument.
Yes, prior to the plant going commercial.
Why should that be a magic date?
Because that's what the system of accounts say, and because the plant is not in operation up to that point. It really is a construction cost. I mean, when they're talking about O&M costs, most of the costs for the plant are not the O&M costs. It might be a few months before the plant goes into service, there's going to be some testing. The plant will be turned over to the system dispatcher so they can make sure it works. But then it goes into commercial operation at that point.
Until the plant goes commercial, you do not have the opportunity to argue, make the argument about the costs up to that point that you want to make about the costs that are incurred after.
Well, because
why should you get it after?
Well, the costs up to this point are the costs that are covered by 41A, the invested capital costs. And after this point, they're no longer invested capital. And the plant's in operation. So prior to this point, the statute 40 deals with that. It basically says you can capitalize those costs, put it into a plant service account, add it to your rate base. They're part of investment capital. But the statute says after this time period, we're not entitled to do that. Those are things you need to expense in your income statement. And what we're basically saying is people should live with cost increases. Ratepayers in the utility should live with cost increases and decreases during this time period. The tax change, various other things. And that once you set rates, you should set rates for the cost of providing service from this point forward. And from this point forward, the ratepayers shouldn't have to pay for the cost of providing service here and the cost of providing service during this past time. It's basically what the statute says, and basically what the accounting will say.
The OPUC's position is that deferred accounting treatment is appropriate in some cases.
No, our position is that it's completely illegal under every situation because of retroactive rating. But we are saying that...
I thought I understood counsel in the prior case to argue that...
Although we were a party to the previous case, we didn't argue, and we didn't have an attorney arguing.
The state has taken several different positions.
Well, on that point, I disagree with Mr. McCullough. Now, what we are saying, though, is if the commission is going to give the utilities deferred charges, then they at least need to give us an opportunity to show that the company doesn't need it or that these amounts should be small. And we're just never given that opportunity.
Well, how are you, if at the rate-making hearing, you can argue the savings over, well, you say you can't, but when you get there and you say, I know they say these are all their costs, and I'm stuck with what they say their costs are, but all you're arguing is I didn't have the opportunity to show the savings during this period of time. Can't you say that their historical period for the year up to the time we're doing the rate deal demonstrates savings, and so they don't need to have their rate base, their return is a formula based on what we've got deferred and capitalized, unless what they realized in savings over this period of time. I mean, your argument, you didn't have the opportunity to argue savings during this period of time, but when you get to the rate-making hearing, isn't that exactly what you're going to be arguing when they get ready to make the rate base and determine what the rate of return will be? Aren't you going to be exactly arguing that I know they had this extraordinary expense, but some of this was offset by certain savings, and some of it wasn't the result of the construction cost, but was the result of other increased normal costs through the thing? And I mean, can all those things be argued?
All that testimony is true.
No, I'm saying in the
rate case, yes. In the rate case, what we're trying to do is figure out what the rates are going to be from this point forward.
Right.
And in that rate case, yes, we do get an opportunity to say they brought Oklahoma Union Power Plant online they didn't have certain purchase power contracts, those costs were reduced. And we throw everything into the mix and we come up with a reasonable rate from this point forward. We're not complaining about that. But what we are prevented from doing is saying the utility is entitled to say it accrued $23 million, and we're going to get $1 million a year for that. And that $1 million a year represents service that was provided during this time period. It's not service that was provided here. Service that was provided back here before we set the rates. And we're saying, well, the company's going to be able to show that its cost went up. It's going to be able to charge us for this past time period, $1 million a year. We want the opportunity to show that it's not $1 million. It's maybe zero. It's maybe $500,000 a year. And that's what we were precluded from presenting.
But the effective. But your argument, the effect would be the same if you put $1 million in rate base, but you show there were savings in the past year that offset some of those increases.
No, no, Your Honor. What we're saying, at this point, the commission sets rates and it says the cost of going forward, providing service from November 30th, 1987 forward, is, and I'm making up a number there, is $100 million. So we're going to let the company charge $100 million for providing service from November 30th forward. But in addition, and that takes into account all these cost increases and decreases, but in addition to that $100 million for providing service in the future, we're also going to let the company go back and charge you $1 million for service that was provided before November 30th, 1987. So the customers end up paying $101 million. And what we're saying is, first off, that's retroactive rate making. That's the essence of retroactive rate making. But if you are going to do it, we should be entitled to say that it's not $1 million in the past period, it's something less than that. And that's what we have precluded from presenting.
And that rate case is 75-10?
Yes, Your Honor.
Has it been argued yet?
It is. No, it has not been argued.
For argument?
No, but although the parties asked for oral argument, all the parties sent in letters, or two of the three parties sent in letters saying, we're not really seeking oral argument, we were just waiting for the disposition of this case here today. And once the court decided these arguments today, the Court of Appeals should just implement that decision.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes the arguments in the second call. The court will take another brief recess.
Your Honor, please rise.